yourselves.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
You're ready?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Live. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Our reaction, the immediate reaction to her resignation is that it is overdue. She should have done this at least a week ago.
That is Speaker Mike Johnson in the United States House of Representatives, and he's talking about Kimberly Cheadle, the failed, absolutely crash and burned head of the Secret Service. Until today, just a few hours ago, Kimberly Cheadle finally turned in her resignation. And as Speaker Johnson said, it came at least a week too late. After her appearance on Capitol Hill, after not trying, to answer questions from members of Congress who want to know, how did the Secret Service, a long-lasting federal agency designed primarily for one purpose, and that is to protect people like the president, the vice president, their families, and a few others, that is their number one job. And on the 13th of July in Butler County, Pennsylvania, they failed, and they failed miserably. I'm going to give you a few thoughts about her exit and some of the questions that remain about the United States Secret Service. But first, welcome to a Tuesday on the Lars Larson Show. It's great to have you with me. If you want to join the conversation, we make that easy. 866-HEY-LARS. And if you happen to be a naysayer, you're going to go right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. You can send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Get about 1,100 a day. Try to answer all of them. And the X poll today, we put up a daily question out of the news of the day for you to consider. And we try to make it interesting. I know a few of them in the last couple of days have been about the assassination attempt, about the Secret Service, about Joe Biden, and where the heck is Joe Biden? I'll have a few thoughts on that a bit later on. But today's question, and I want you to think about this because this affects almost every family in America. Great Britain, the United Kingdom, has decided and did decide a few months ago that it would block the use of puberty blockers for so-called transgender kids. Now, what does that mean? It means that the UK said we are no longer going to let doctors chemically castrate teenage boys and teenage girls. That has to come to an end. And why? Because the UK said these drugs are not safe for children. Not only that, but it is a lifelong decision. The effects of those puberty blocker drugs in many cases cannot be reversed. And we now know from some good research that's been done recently that an awful lot of the kids who claim that they're trans for a time, to put it plainly, they grow out of it. They get past it and then they decide, yeah, I wanted to be a girl after all, or I wanted to be a boy after all. I don't really want to change my gender. Only by that point, we've seen too many crash and burn cases where young boys and girls made the decision to take these puberty blockers, to have surgery done, to have double mastectomies done on teenage girls. And the end result is you can't put it back the way it was. So Great Britain banned the use of puberty blockers for transgender kids. And what did the critics immediately say? They said, you're going to cause a lot of these kids to commit suicide. Well, has that turned out to be true since Great Britain put that block on puberty blockers a few months ago? Wesley Smith, our friend from the Center for Human Exceptionalism, says the ideologues never quit. After the UK closed its major gender transitioning clinic for youth as, quote, not safe for children and blocked the use of prescribing puberty blockers, ideologues spread the rumors on social media that suicides among gender confused youth had increased dramatically. Basically, they went out and had an independent review done based on statistical data. There has been no increase in youth suicide. So should we, and by we, I mean all the clinics and all the hospitals and all the doctors in the United States, should we block the use of puberty blockers for transgender kids? And I want to tell you something. I've told you that my personal philosophy is that most of people's actions on this planet can be explained by one or more of three things: money, sex, and power. Those explain most of the decisions made by human beings on planet Earth. So what's driving the puberty blockers? Well, with the kids, you really don't know. Teenage angst. But when it comes to the doctors and the hospitals, American hospitals made about $3 billion giving out puberty blockers and doing so-called gender transition surgery, meaning surgical mutation of mutilation of children. So $3 billion, due to be about $5 billion by next year, by 2025. There's a lot of money tied up in this, so there are powerful forces that say no. We want to keep on giving these drugs to the kids. I think it's wrong. I think they should stop. I'm asking you, should we block the use of puberty blockers for so-called transgender kids the way Great Britain has done? You can find the question on X at Lars Larson Show and on my website at LarsLarson.com. But let me get back to Kimberly Cheadle. Just let me remind you, how did she get to her job to begin with? Well, she was Jill Biden, Dr. Jill, as she insists on being called. Dr. Jill Biden, the first lady, thought a lot of Kimberly Cheadle, a former Secret Service agent who went on to become the head of security for PepsiCo, meaning she was in charge of security for Doritos, Cheetos, and Mountain Dew, among other things. Then she came back as director of the Secret Service, and she has completely screwed things up. She nearly allowed the assassination of President Donald Trump. She shortchanged his security. And I want you to take a listen to what was said in some of those hearings yesterday and today. Next soundbite.
You know what it looks like, Director? It looks like you won't answer some pretty basic questions. It looks like you got a 9% raise and you cut corners when it came to protecting one of the most important individuals, most well-known individuals on the planet. A former president, likely the guy who's going to be the next president. Looks like you guys were cutting corners. That's what it looks like to me. Is that true?
I am here today because I want to answer questions, but I also want to be cautious.
You might want to, but you haven't answered. I don't think you've answered one question from the chairman, the ranking member, or me. Well, we got a lot of other people asking. We'll see if your record improves. But right now, you haven't answered, I don't think, any questions. I yield back.
Yeah, yield back. That is Jim Jordan, representative. Now, one of the key questions has been, what happened on that day in Butler County, Pennsylvania? You know what might answer that? Recordings of the audio transmissions of local police and the Secret Service agents on the scene, the very small team that was assigned to safeguard President Trump's security. Take a listen to the answer on Secret Service audio.
Does the Secret Service routinely record communications between and amongst detail?
Radio communications?
Any communication.
Well, email communications are captured, as well as text messages. And then, depending on the detail, radio communications are recorded.
Does the Secret Service have recorded communications from the July 13th event?
We do not have radio communications from that day.
It's sounding more and more like a setup all the time. You have thin security, you have a known threat from Iran of an assassination plot aimed at Donald Trump, and the Secret Service just decided today's the day, we're not going to roll tape. And by the way, Jill Biden was also holding an event in Pennsylvania on July the 13th. She had four times as many Secret Service personnel. And by the way, her event was not at a fairgrounds the way Donald Trump's was. So you're using fewer security personnel to secure acres and acres of land because it's Jill Biden, but you put very little protection around President Donald Trump. What does that tell you? Well, Kim Cheadle submitted her resignation today, and let's hope that they can hire somebody competent. Although from the Biden regime or now the Harris regime, I'm not exactly holding my breath. Plan to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Elon Musk sums up America's government.
And what I see all over the place is people who care about looking good while doing evil.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper or mainstream media bias.
It's Tuesday, America. Do you know where your president is? Joe Biden last seen in public last Wednesday. COVID provided an excuse to cancel his schedule and then disappear for the last 6 days. Eight days ago, Biden vowed that he would stay in the race for re-election. And then 2 days ago, a staffer posted Joe Biden's withdrawal from the race on social media. No direct video, no direct audio of Joe making that withdrawal, just a posted typed message. No sign of him since until this morning, although the White House claims he's coming back later on today. His own staff learned Sunday's news that he was withdrawing from the race for re-election 1 minute before the public learned it. The president didn't even tell his own cabinet members. He had a staffer call them up. Did Joe know that he was dropping out? Can you say palace coup? When the leader of Israel, an ally and a nation at war, flew into Washington, D.C. yesterday, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and Secretary of State Anthony Blinken were not there at the airport. He was greeted by a junior league staffer. Today's meeting between Netanyahu and Biden canceled, despite Joe's claim that he's working hard to free American hostages held in Gaza by the Hamas terrorists. VP Harris refuses to preside over a joint session of Congress Thursday when Netanyahu speaks because she wants those Muslim votes in Michigan. Reporters must ask why she lied for years about Joe Biden's mental decline, which she saw up close and personal and yet denied publicly. That is, unless Kamala just wants to claim that she was clueless, that might actually be believable. Now, our question of the day, I've got two of them today. Number one, the Federalist raises this question. Does Joe Biden know he's not running? And does America actually have a president as of today? They say it wasn't until Joe Biden's X account posted the statement on Sunday afternoon that some of the president's staff found out he would not be running for re-election. Politico reported that. But are we sure that the post wasn't news to Joe as well? A few minutes before 2 p.m. on Sunday, Biden's X account posted an image of a letterhead document, but not the White House letterhead, announcing he would stand down from the 2024 campaign. The note said Biden would speak to the nation later on this week. Well, he's scheduled to speak tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Should be interesting to see what he has. Biden, who supposedly is dealing with a COVID infection, has yet to be seen alive. Well, he was seen alive early this morning after this was written. He was getting on Air Force One, but then he was on the plane for about an hour, and the plane didn't take off. So we're still waiting to find out what's going on there. Second question of the day. Does the Seattle Times Daily Dead Fish Wrapper regret its editorial analysis about 4 years ago? The one where they told voters that Joe Biden's age wasn't that big a deal. And a hat tip to our friend Randy Pebble at Shiftwa. Although the Times may regret this editorial now, we should never forget that the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper Seattle Times was part of the mainstream media gaslighting voters on Biden's mental capacity. The editorial board of the paper wrote, though much has been made of Biden's age, there's not much of a difference with Trump. Biden is 81, Trump is 77. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
Well, this has to do with Joe Biden and his administration shoveling out your cash hand over fist, or I guess that mixes the metaphor. Huge funding for Oregon's so-called climate programs. Yesterday, the EPA announced that it was awarding Oregon just shy of $200 million. And what is that money going to be spent on? They say to reduce emissions from building, transportation, waste, and materials management. Now, I got to suggest this to you. I can't wait until Todd Myers of the Washington Policy Center takes a look at this. You know, the government has been famously spending gigantic amounts of money to pull a ton or two of carbon out of emissions. I don't happen to believe that carbon dioxide is a pollutant. I consider it plant food. But even if you do believe it's a pollutant, should you be spending the money in the way in which you get the greatest bang for the buck? What this is it's graft. That's all that's happening. Joe Biden is shoveling out $200 million through the EPA to his Democrat friends in Oregon, and they can spend it on whatever they want, whether it reduces carbon dioxide or not. Our email of the day, But you can send more to talk at LarsLarson.com. From an unsigned farmer who didn't want his name on it. Lars, I can tell the state why farmers are quitting the business, and we've had a net loss of farmers in the last few years. Number one, expenses are up, and the prices they get for the crops are down, assuming they can even get a contract to grow the crops. The price of seed, fuel, labor, replacement parts, insurance, agricultural chemicals are all increasing. Farmers are having a difficult time making a profit, and yet the price of food is up. The farmers and their families need to eat, plus taxes and government rules and regulations keep on increasing. That is why the farmers are quitting. Glad to be with you on a Tuesday. Always glad to take your calls. And when we're talking about thorny issues like the firing of a Secret Service director, about Kamala Harris being a candidate for the Democrat Party without having been voted for by any Democrats, please pay attention to that. The Democrat Party that keeps telling you that Donald Trump is the threat to democracy is saying that it's going to choose Kamala Harris to run for president, even though no Democrats have voted for Kamala Harris for president. Her last run for president, she got about 3% in the polls, and she dropped out before Iowa even held its caucuses. She didn't get any votes. She was tremendously unpopular. She remains unpopular. And the only thing she's more popular than is Joe Biden. So can the Democrat Party truly say that a candidate chosen by party insiders and not by the voters is evidence of their efforts to protect democracy? I'd love to hear that naysayer call. Let's go first to Kurt, listening on the Radio Northwest Network in Medford. How are you doing, Kurt? What's on your mind?
Fine, Lars. How are you? So,
quite well.
You know, I watched the hearing yesterday, and I think a lot of people are kind of cheering the fact that this woman's now gone. And I was particularly interested with AOC, and at first I thought she had a degree of rationality about her, but then I took about three steps back, and I saw, in my opinion, what's happening. If you look at the timeline here, from the time of the shooting, the tragic shooting of the loss of that family man, okay, with Trump, okay, then what happens? Biden steps down, Harris becomes elevated, Cheadle doesn't say a word. Okay. Yep. And then only yesterday does Washington, D.C. finally find some quote unquote bipartisanship. There is absolutely no way that the Democrats are going to allow Cheadle to go ahead and provide protection for Kamala Harris. That's the reason why they wanted her gone, not because there was just
because she was incompetent, is what you're saying. They didn't want to have somebody who's clearly demonstrably incompetent providing protection for Harris or Jill Biden or anybody else, right?
That's exactly it. They're going to get somebody like a Dirty Harry or a John Wick up there. I can guarantee it's not going to be a DEI candidate anymore. Harris will be ensconced. She'll be cocooned by the very best security this country has to offer.
And Kurt, pay attention. Earlier this hour, I said, on the day that Donald Trump was shot in the head, Dr. Jill Biden had four times as many Secret Service agents around her, and she was not doing an event at a fairgrounds in open air the way Donald Trump was. They deliberately shortchanged him. I think they were angling to get him killed.
The Lars Larson Show. Told, Lars has welcomed naysayers for 27 years, but occasionally...
Who is this person who speaks to me as though I needed his advice?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your calls, and I'll do that in just a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. Naysayers go first at 866-439-5277. Send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Don writes in, Don Sheridan, Lars, Kimberly Cheadle, the director of the Secret Service, is making her getaway. In my opinion, she is complicit in the attempt on President Trump's assassination. But all the evidence and her reluctance to be transparent and not be elusive, everything lines up with the communications using encrypted communications with both her and the shooter. I wouldn't be the least surprised if Secret Service agents at the event weren't involved as well. They know what areas they normally cover were not covered. They need independent investigators to seize and get the information from Cheadle and Crook's phones before it's destroyed by the FBI. You know that we're going to be hearing those kind of theories for a long, long time. I think it's much more pedestrian than that. I think the Biden administration hired Kimberly Cheadle to make DEI at Secret Service, meaning hire a whole bunch of people, not based on their skills and talents and abilities and knowledge, but based on whether or not they checked certain boxes, primarily the gender box, because she had a public appeal that she was going to make 30% of all new agents be female by 2030, come hell or high water. Well, the problem is, if you hire people based on the fact that they have a certain gender instead of based on whether or not they know how to do the job, you get situations like Donald Trump getting shot in the head, which is a bad result. And she did a bad thing, and she's going to be out. And I don't have any confidence at all that Joe Biden or his administration or whoever's actually pulling the strings is going to actually change that. They'll put somebody else in that spot. In fact, they might even leave the spot unfilled for a time. Glad to be with you and always glad to take your calls. Let's go to Pat first. Hey, Pat, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind? Hey, Pat. Otherwise, you miss your opportunity. Lars, yes.
Nope. I'm here. Had a break in my phone. So thank you for your show, bud. I appreciate it. Question on Sunday, I was going through the emails, and FBI was trying to break into the shooter's phone, and they said that they had found three offshore accounts linked to that shooter.
They
did.
Is
that fake news, or have you found anything?
No, that's real. He had three offshore accounts and two phones, two cell phones. Now, can I suggest, he's a 20-year-old guy. I don't think it's that exotic that if somebody is, because I don't have any offshore accounts, and by that I assume they mean offshore cyber accounts, meaning related to communications. Getting VPNs and things like that is really, really easy to do these days. And if you say, well, you had two phones, how does a 20-year-old kid have two phones who's still living at home? I can go to Walmart and buy a couple of phones, two of them for about $50. So having two phones is not that unusual. Having, having certain VPN accounts that go overseas, also not that unusual. The only question is, if you believe that he was being directed by somebody else, paid by somebody else, any of those, where's the evidence? Because it does appear that this was a 20-year-old kid who stole his father's rifle that was bought more than a decade ago, and that he was a little bit off his nut, or maybe a lot off his nut, and that he decided to go and do something crazy. And I also wonder about the fact that the neighbors of his parents, he lived at home, the neighbors of his parents said until recently they had Trump signs all over their yard. They were apparently big fans of Donald Trump. Well, if the kid is on the outs with mom and dad over whatever issue it might be, it doesn't appear to be trans in this case, you can't really tell what the issue was, and the parents haven't said anything about what was going wrong in their son's life. But if he was on the outs with mom and dad and they were fans of Donald Trump, maybe he thought, I'll show them. And he goes out and tries to assassinate Donald Trump.
Good point. Thank you for the clarification. When I read that, I thought it was bank accounts, but you sound like you're saying there were like
VPNs are called virtual private networks, so that you can, I have one that I use to hook the call screener to the radio station to my producer, but I don't have any other exotic VPNs, because the only reason generally I think that if you want to safeguard your communications, you might get a VPN is a virtual private network. And there are a bunch of them that you can get for either for free or for a very small amount of money. Yeah. So I don't find that exotic.
Right. I don't either. I thank you again for the clarification. And again, I thought it was bank accounts when they said that he had three accounts offshore. So I appreciate it, Lars.
Absolutely. And if we find out he had offshore bank accounts, I'm perfectly willing to go back and take a look at that as well. And then we've got this. Andrew writes, and Lars, after years of lies by the Democrats and the media alike about Biden's mental prowess or lack thereof, Biden was finally disposed of by saviors of democracy. In a palace coup, Democrat leaders dumped him and disenfranchised millions of voters that wanted the big guy. Then they patted themselves on the back and praised old Joe's patriotism and thanked him for 50 years of feeding at the public trough. Kamala the cackler was quickly anointed and the gushing began. again. This is a remake of the classic movie Being There with Kamala starring as Chauncey Gardner. Politics is the art of the possible, and with Kamala, failure is an option. She's not ready for the training wheels to come off, but she is at the top of the ticket. Watch for there to be some emergency to allow last-minute rule changes for voting procedures. I think they're already there. I mean, the Democrats have already said that they want to get Ohio to change its state law, because Ohio had said you have to have the candidate's name by the 7th of August. They said, can we get a special exception? They apparently got it. And one of the ones that seems strange to me, and I can't find any reporting about it in Nevada, but consider this. In the state of Nevada, the day after that debate debacle where Joe Biden did the full-on face plant on the stage, and, you know, he cratered his own run for reelection in that 90-minute period. Well, the next day, that Friday, at 5 p.m., Nevada said, if your name is on the ballot as of close of business, 5 p.m. on Friday night, the Friday after the debate a few weeks ago, then that name stays on the ballot unless the candidate passes away. And that's the only way you get your name off that ballot. As I said, I think they will be looking for lots and lots of exceptions. But the end of the day message should be this. The Democrats have claimed all along that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. And then what the Democrats have done, the Biden crime family and others, is they've said, we are going to use every tool of the government to keep the people in power, the Democrats, in power. We will use the FBI, we'll use the CIA, we'll use the Secret Service. We'll shortchange Donald Trump's protection. We'll give four times as much to the First Lady and one quarter as much to Donald Trump. And they claim he's the threat to democracy. And yet 16 million Democrats cast ballots in the primary elections this year, and 14 million of them voted for Joe Biden. That's a legitimate choice. I think Joe Biden's a terrible candidate. I think he's a terrible president. But having said that, if Democrats want to vote for a dimwit like Joe Biden, that is their choice. So you've got 14 million votes that you then throw right out the door, or right, down the drain. And you say, no, we're going to have the choice made, and it won't be made necessarily by your delegates. We're going to tell your delegates what to do. They're going to line up, as people in the Democrat Party are wont to do, and they're going to simply take whoever it is that we choose for them. Now, we already know what the voters would do with Kamala Harris as a candidate, because she's run for president before. She got a whopping 3% in the polls. She didn't get a single vote, for her. She dropped out of the race before the Iowa caucuses even happened. And now, all of a sudden, the party elites have decided she is the candidate, and you voters don't have anything to say about it. Now, is that saving democracy? Back in a moment. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Sometimes the listeners say it best.
Hey, Lars, love your show, and I really appreciate what you do. Boy, you cover more territory in an afternoon than a lonely dad during springtime.
Who's next? This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program, and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. I want to do something good here in just a moment. Occasionally I try to do that. This segment of the show is brought to you by 540Training.com, concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense online at 540Training.com. So Sheldon Hall joins me now, and he was on the phone to me yesterday, and he called up. I'm glad you were inspired to call. I hope that we can do you some good. But would you, welcome to the program, by the way, Sheldon. Would you mind telling my audience again, if they didn't hear it yesterday, what was done to your church?
Well, thanks again for having me on, Lars. Our church was, I call it, desecrated. Somebody broke in on Saturday and put out four chemical fire extinguishers over the entire building, three floors, sanctuary, pianos, children's toys, Bibles, And it's the kind of stuff that you don't just wash it off and put the stuff back. And so it's a desecration.
And you would like to raise some money to fix that up. But this sounds like this wasn't somebody there to steal. This wasn't somebody there to do anything to their own personal benefit except just destroy the interior of a church. Am I right in looking at it that way?
Yeah. I mean, this wasn't kids that graffitied and punched holes and, you know, looking for cash or anything. This is somebody who took these fire extinguishers and sprayed it as they backed out of every room. And I don't know why. To me, it seems like someone who's angry at religion, either that particular church, which I have a hard time thinking it's only a parishioners of 25 of them, or it's just a general, I hate religion, and I don't understand that. And then the kick you while you're down moment is the police, you know, didn't even show up and said, you know, send a phone or email report. And the lady tried, and it timed her out after 30 minutes. She's 75 years old. What do you expect her to be able to do with technology?
I mean, and yesterday kind of people- I told you, Sheldon, that if, and I hate to say it this way, but in the news business, if you see an attack, say, on a Jewish synagogue, and I brought this up yesterday, I looked up a few examples. There have been some examples where there were bomb threat hoax calls that were made to a synagogue about 6 months ago in the Portland area. And police responded, the FBI even responded, said, we're going to investigate it as well. And yet this happens to a Christian church, and the treatment is entirely different. And that seems wrong.
It does. And, you know, part of why I'm on the line and try to get on all the TV stations is to let the community know that this isn't okay, and we need to, this kind of hate can't stand darkness, and we are the light that will shine and keep this stuff from happening. Because
now, by the way, yesterday I told you, Sheldon, yesterday, if you set up a GoFundMe, I'll be glad to help you publicize it. I don't know. Do you have any idea? You're going to have to, the congregation's going to have to move elsewhere for a time and then do all the repairs to your church in St. John's?
They have good insurance, and so they should be able to be made mostly whole. Part of my reason for the GoFundMe account is they've been having continual vandalism, and they've stopped calling the police because they don't even show up. Broken window every week. So I would like the GoFundMe to be able to pay the deductible, but also get them some security so they can protect themselves.
I think that's entirely sensible.
Videos.
And in fact, what is the deductible on a policy covering a building like that?
I'm not sure. I mean, personally, my house is $1,000, but as far as a religious institution, who knows? I mean, you know, they're pretty bare bones, so it could be $2,000, $5,000. I don't know. I haven't asked that question yet of the secretary.
Okay, so tell people how to find the GoFundMe for the Bethel Baptist Church of St. John's.
Just type that in, Bethel Baptist Church, and it should come right up on GoFundMe. I also sent your staff a link to it, and so if you would put that on your website, they could probably just click that, and it'll take them right there.
We'd be happy to do that. Do they have a place to move to in the meantime while all these repairs are made? Do you know?
Part of what the news has helped with is we've already gotten 3 offers of local places that would like us to be able to use their facilities. And the pastor and the secretary have already gone to look at one. And so I'm grateful for that.
You know, the other thing I'd like to know, Sheldon, I don't know, you always assume that idiots who do things like this, just purely destructive things, are not going to brag about it, but sometimes we're wrong. And if it was teenagers, oftentimes teenagers will tell their friends this happened. If somebody gets word of that, I don't know whether I should tell them to call the police, because the police are going to say, we don't have any report of a crime there, which, by the way, as much of a supporter of the police as I've been over the years, I think it's pathetic that you can't call and get anybody to even pay attention when something like this is done.
I agree, and part of why I was upset is that there's fire extinguishers on the floor that no one has touched that are covered in powder, and I've got to assume fingerprints. So, you know, you have to show up, though, to do any kind of investigation, whether it be on social media or the simple things of checking for fingerprints. You got to show up.
Well, for lack of anything better, Sheldon, if somebody wants to email me or text me or whatever, if I get leads, I'll send them on to you. In the meantime, shame on the police for not responding to this. I hope a little bit of publicity helps fix that up. And go to the GoFundMe for the Bethel Baptist Church of St. John's. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to take your calls. It's also a pleasure to hear today of the resignation of Kimberly Cheadle, now former director, soon to be former director of the United States Secret Service, former employee of PepsiCo, where her job was providing security for Cheetos, Doritos, and Mountain Dew. And she failed, and her agency failed so miserably. And I'd put a lot of the blame on DEI. But I wanted to talk about some of the legal implications of this failure, even though she's departing the agency. So Bill Jacobson joins me now, founder of the law blog called Legal Insurrection, which is a great read every day. A clinical law professor of law and director of the Securities Law Clinic at Cornell Law School, where student groups routinely gather to try to cancel out Professor Jacobson, all of them unsuccessful so far. How you doing, Professor?
Good. How are you?
Not so bad. So can we talk about the other legal angles of this? It seems to me that the United States Secret Service deliberately withheld security from Donald Trump. Perhaps, my tinfoil hat is not on too tight, but when we see that Jill Biden, who spoke to an Italian sons and daughters dinner in Pittsburgh the same night that Donald Trump was in Butler County, Pennsylvania, her Secret Service contingent was four times the size of the contingent that was safeguarding President Trump at a fairgrounds outside in the open air. And that, I mean, even to a lay person like me, that sounds like they deliberately withheld security from him and they nearly got him killed. Am I wrong to state it that way?
Well, I'm not sure it was deliberate. I mean, we'd need to know more about it. They clearly were incompetent. They clearly didn't do the job they should have done. Whether it was a deliberate decision, though, I think, remains to be seen. I think that you would have to believe that somebody made a decision there to let this particular person get a shot off. And, it's just a really hard, I mean, it's a comedy of errors if it wasn't so serious. But I don't know about the deliberate part,
okay,
or whether it was just pure incompetence.
I mean, the only thing that amped that up for me, Professor, was when we heard within a few days after the shooting, and thank God President Trump was not killed, but he came within a fraction of an inch of being killed, that 2 weeks before that, the Iranians, our government found out, had some kind of assassination plot aimed at Trump. I'm not saying the kid on the roof in Butler County was an Iranian. I'm saying if you get advance notice weeks ahead that there's a specific assassination plot aimed at a former president, and what do? You amp up security. Well, the Secret Service would have you believe they've said so. Well, we had amped up security in Butler County, Pennsylvania. If Saturday, July 13th in Butler County, Pennsylvania was amped up security, I kind of wonder what it was like on a regular basis.
Yeah, well, the Iranian threat's been known for quite a while. In March, the FBI put out an alert for an Iranian intelligence officer who was believed to be in Florida trying to recruit people to kill former government officials. The Iranians have made threats against Trump and others in senior positions for the killing of their general, Soleimani. So, the threat was well known, and clearly, I mean, even if it wasn't a former president who's the presumptive nominee of a major party, everything here is completely inexcusable. And when I was suggesting it wasn't necessarily deliberate, doesn't mean I'm excusing it at all. I mean, they left open the one roof that had a clear shot at the podium. Okay. Yep. And so something is extremely, extremely wrong here. And I don't know if we'll ever get an answer. I don't know if we'll ever get an answer how this 20-year-old kid with either no internet history or an extremely limited internet history, not known to be a problem. You know, usually in these cases, you've got, you know, the school shootings, you've got a kid who's a known problem. And the question is, why didn't anybody stop him? Well, no one's really saying that here. And so something's just extremely wrong here. And I'm hesitant to jump to conclusions, but the notion that this Secret Service was in on it or something like that, really, you need a higher level of proof than pure incompetence.
And I agree with you there. In fact, the kids' school has pushed back strongly against the stories, that the typical ones you see every time he was bullied at school. The school says there's no evidence of that. He was supposed to be on the rifle team. He was not on the rifle team. And there were a bunch of issues that came out early, data points that were refuted by his school. So does Trump have any civil case, or maybe even is there a criminal case to be brought against Kim Cheadle for criminal negligence for not running the agency, or does she get immunity as well?
Well, I think there's probably, first of all, he would never assert a claim, I think.
No,
but second of all, I don't think there really is, you know, a claim here. First of all, if it is a criminal claim, it's not something he could bring. It would have to be her bosses at the FBI, at the Department of Justice. So I doubt it's criminal, but, you know.
You mean Merrick Garland is not going to bring a case against it? Okay.
The next attorney general might. So I don't know if it rises to the level of criminal negligence. But in terms of civil case, I mean, generally speaking, the rule is that you don't have a claim against the police for the police failing to do their job properly. Now, that's in the instance where some other third party harms you, failing to provide security, things like that. There are exceptions to that. If they have a special duty to you, like you're a prisoner, you're in their custody, they have a special duty to protect you. But you're kind of general, you know, the police aren't doing their job and therefore there's crime on the streets. You don't have a claim against the police. And I did do a little digging, and I couldn't really find anything about people suing the Secret Service except one case from the 90s where somebody was attacked in D.C. in front of a diplomatic residence that the Secret Service, for whatever the reason, was supposed to be providing security at. And his case got tossed because the court found that there was no special duty to that person, and kind of mere negligence was not enough to, in that circumstance, assert a claim. But there doesn't seem to have been, that I'm aware of or could find, you know, cases against the Secret Service by one of its protectees, you know, for failing to provide that service, and with good reason, because they generally do a good job. Okay, you know, we all know about the big instances where they haven't done a good job, and they're very few. And so for the most part, the Secret Service protects the people they're supposed to protect. So there's no reason that you would have, you know, a long history of litigation or anything like that. So I don't think he's really got a claim.
And Professor, that's why I began where I began, a little on the crazy side. But it's because when you have an agency that has a fairly good reputation, other than prostitutes and other things that they've gotten involved in recent years, other than that, they've done a pretty good job of protection. And so when they then fail and you say, oh, and they had a very thin security team that day and four times the security on the First Lady and a known threat and all the rest of that, it makes you wonder, is it just incompetence, just rank incompetence, or is it in fact something else? That is Professor Bill Jacobson. You can see his fascinating law blog. It's called Legal Insurrection, and it's a great read. Professor, thank you very much for the time. Back in a moment, we'll get to your phone calls and your emails, and we'll talk about a really crazy case of Trump derangement syndrome next on the Radio Northwest Network. Are you?
If Sleepy Joe was on Jeopardy.
This man, also known as the worst president in United States history, loves ice cream, lounging on beaches, and sniffing children. Joe.
Who is me?
Wait, where am I?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. There is something strange that a lot of us on the right have called Trump derangement syndrome. And I want to say a little something about that because there have been some recent incidents, and I have a feeling that in the next 104 days or so until November 5th, and probably depending on the result on after November 5th and how soon we know it, we're likely to see a whole lot more of this. Now, am I wishing for that? No. I wish that people would behave rationally. The problem is, and this is a weird way that America is sort of bifurcated. You've got people on the right and people on the left. You've got Democrats, you got Republicans, and not every Republican is all that conservative on the right. But what happens is they react entirely differently. For example, you have groups like Antifa and BLM on the left, and what do? They like to riot. They like to burn things. They occasionally get people killed. The Antifa BLM riots of 2020, just 4 years ago, resulted in about 36 murders. They resulted in tens of thousands of people being sent to the hospital, hundreds of thousands of people getting hurt in these so-called mostly peaceful demonstrations. And then, of course, you got the media. On the left, if there is something like an Antifa riot, you can literally find real video of reporters standing in front of a burning building saying, well, tonight's protest was mostly peaceful, except, of course, for the arson that occurred here and, of course, for the people that were taken off to the hospital with injuries, including people attacked with lasers to the eyes, to blind people, things like that. Now, on the right, you don't find that. And I know I'm going to get some pushback. I'll probably get a naysayer, too. I'm glad to get naysayers, by the way. If you want to dial in, it's 866-439-5277, 866-HEY-LARS, or send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. But on occasion, I get calls from people who say, Lars, we should go down and have a really big rally and cause some trouble. And I've always responded to that by saying, number one, I don't believe in that. I do believe in speaking my mind, and you hear me do it on the radio every day. Have I spoken in public? Sure, I do that as well, occasionally. But do I go down and say, why, we're going to set things on fire. We're going to go down and damage buildings. We're going to go down and spray paint graffiti vandalism all over somebody else's property. The fact is that conservatives and liberals view those two things differently. They say, yes, I have a right to petition my government for redress of grievances. I have a right to protest. I have a right to put a sign on a piece of cardboard and march around and sing the national anthem at full volume. Although nobody wants to hear me say that. That might be considered a violation of the Geneva Code. But the left and the right behave differently in this country. And for whatever reason, we now have a woman who appears to be the odds-on favorite to get the Jackass Party nomination. Kamala Harris, old round heels, is going to get the nomination, it appears, because the fix is already in without the assistance of the voters. But do you remember what she was doing? She was literally telling people that the Antifa and BLM riots should continue. I've got sound bites of her saying that in 2020. Saying the riots are going on, they may even continue past the election, and they should continue. She also helped raise money to get some of the people who were accused of crimes during those riots out of jail on bail. I mean, even where the police said, look, this person did some terrible things. And the response from people like Kamala Harris and the left was, yeah, and we're going to keep on doing them till we get our way. It has been the approach. If you notice that when Antifa and BLM went to the streets in 2020 and they said, we demand the defunding of the police, and then they started burning things and they started looting stores and staging riots, and the media went along with it, what did they get? Many of the cities where they made those demands, they got their demands, so it worked for them. Now, should conservatives imitate them? No, conservatives should not. But I want you to understand the difference between the two groups. And if somebody has a great example of a mob of conservatives somewhere setting fire to a building and then threatening to shoot people and hurt people and shoot the cops and everybody else in the eyes with laser beams and things like that, by all means, call the show or send me an email and tell me about it. Now, all this came to mind because I saw that right now in Hancock, Michigan, there is a police manhunt underway because of what was done to an 80-year-old man who, at last report, is still in critical condition in the hospital. Listen to what inspired this person to take the action he took.
The incidents are two vehicle vandalizations and a hit and run. All three are suspected to be politically motivated. In all three, the suspect was driving an ATV four-wheeler. The hit and run was at a residence on Anthony Street at roughly 5:45 in the afternoon. An 80-year-old resident was setting up a Donald Trump support signs in his yard. According to the police, the driver had pulled out the signs, and when the resident tried to put them back, the driver came back into the yard and ran the resident over. The resident is now at Portage Health in critical condition.
Now imagine this, an 80-year-old guy is out in his own front yard putting up Donald Trump signs. Does he have a right to do that? Absolutely. Does anybody have a right to come and tear the signs out of this man's yard? And the answer is no, they don't. So when he tries to put the signs back, he gets physically attacked. I want to give you fair warning on this too, because think about what it takes for somebody, not, this is not apparently somebody who's, you know, the usual crazies that are living on the streets, that are addicted to drugs, mentally ill, all the other things that typically put somebody in the condition now known as homelessness, or if you're politically correct, houselessness. No, this is somebody who has the money to put on the garb, plain black garb, black helmet, to disguise himself. Mount a machine, typical four-wheeler is going to set you back $3,000 to $10,000, and then go out and physically attack a man for putting a political sign in his own front yard. And when the man tries to put the sign back up after the driver of the ATV knocks it down, he runs over an 80-year-old man with a 400-pound ATV. Now, that's the kind of response. And as I said, if you can come up with some examples where conservatives have gone out and done this kind of thing, those events I was talking about, the riots and all from 4 years ago, you can say, well, that was 4 years ago. That was during the pandemic year. Things were weird. Okay, I'll grant you that. Not weird enough to justify the kind of mob violence that Antifa and BLM engaged in. This just happened. This just happened in the state of Michigan. And I think you're seeing attacks on Christian churches, the ones that don't go with the program and support the left, because there are a bunch of left-wing churches that aren't really preaching from the book. They're used as a political platform for those on the left. But if you consider that people this year seem willing to go out and commit acts of violence because they don't like Donald Trump, and they don't like anybody who supports Donald Trump. And of course, we've had Joe Biden for literally four and a half years, if you count the campaign, running around saying these MAGA types, that they're a danger to America. Donald Trump is not Joe Biden's only target. He targets Trump for sure, but he generally lumps anybody who supports Trump, and that includes yours truly, into a category and says, these people are a threat to democracy. These people are a threat to everything Americans believe in. No, we're not. We want to be able to have elections. We want to have them counted fairly. We want dead people and illegal aliens off the voter rolls. We want that. But we're not the threat that you are. You and the left are a physical threat in these kinds of cases to the rest of us. And the fact is, Americans, especially conservatives, are not going to simply cow down to whatever Joe and his friends demand. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. New plan of action. Just mug all the Dems.
I got jumped like 5 weeks ago walking home in New York City. When I woke up, I genuinely felt like a different person. Because I was on the floor, I was bleeding, I was concussed, and I was 100% Republican.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I want to tell you about today's poll on X, because I consider this one of the most important issues out there. Should we block the use of puberty-blocking drugs for transgender children the way that Great Britain has done? Now, I'm being very specific about that. Great Britain took a look at the use of puberty-blocking drugs, and they said this is causing major and, in many cases, permanent changes to children who are not old enough to even consent to what is being done to them. Many of those kids find themselves regretting the choice that they made later on. And if it goes on into surgery and other major changes to those children who, again, are not old enough to consent, it's a bad idea. So, some time ago, Great Britain said, we're not doing that anymore. We are blocking the use of puberty-blocking drugs for children. Now, that's not adults. The adults can do, I guess, what they want. You want to, you know, stick a piece of metal in your skin or your ears or your nose? Go right ahead. You want to have a tattoo? Go right ahead. You're an adult. Make whatever decision you want. You want to take puberty blocking drugs? That's between you and your doctor. But for children, hands off the kids. Now, the immediate suggestion was made by the so-called advocates of gender-affirming care, which really means chemical castration and surgical mutilation of children. They said, oh, you're going to see the suicide rate go up dramatically. Or our friend Wesley Smith at the Center for Human Exceptionalism has pointed out they just finished an independent review of the statistical data about what's happened since that block was imposed on puberty-blocking drugs. And guess what? No measured increase in youth suicides. Now, some of the parents who have transgender kids have been told by the kid's doctor, why, if you don't accommodate this belief that this boy thinks he's a girl or girl thinks she's a boy, if you don't go along with it and give them gender-affirming care, why, there is a great likelihood they will kill themselves. Well, the fact is, the Great Britain example shows that's not what's happening. And yet here in America, we did about $3 billion, I say we, the medical community did about $3 billion of this chemical castration of children last year. By next year, it is supposed to hit about $5 billion. Now, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money, and the hospitals and the doctors and the clinics, they want that cash. And if they have to mutilate some children to get it, they're going to do it. I'm suggesting that America should follow Great Britain's lead and say, let's block the use of puberty blockers and then take a very close look at what happens, just as Great Britain has. I don't think you're going to see a dramatic increase in suicide. I think instead you're going to see a lot of kids who, based on the studies that have been done by the doctors, simply grow out of the transgender notion they might have for a couple of years while they're a kid. And God forbid they end up like some of the young adult women and men who did decide to do the transition, and today they've had permanent changes made to their bodies, and they can't undo them. You know, they can't put it back the way it was. So the question is, should we block the use of puberty blockers for transgender kids the way that Great Britain has? I would answer yes to that. You can answer any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. And by the way, yesterday's ex-poll question, now that Joe Biden has quit the race for re-election, should he resign the presidency? I said yes. 84% of you said yes. Only 16% of you said no. I thought we'd check in with our friend Timothy Sandifer, who's vice president at the Goldwater Institute's Scharf Norton Center for Constitutional Litigation. Timothy, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
Tell me what's going on in California with Governor Newsom, since I thought he was one of the odds-on possibilities as a pick to replace Joe Biden in the run for the Democrat candidacy for president, but apparently he's not. What's he doing with this so-called blueprint for a safer economy? What's that all about?
Well, this goes back to the COVID pandemic when Governor Newsom shut down the state like a lot of states did and then issued this order called the Blueprint for a Safer Economy, this lengthy document that explained what businesses had to do in order to reopen when the state began, you know, lifting the restrictions. And these rules go beyond, you know, some kind of an emergency limit that you would expect in some urgent situation, and basically set the rules going forward. And the problem with that, of course, is that that's not the job of a governor. That's the same thing as making a law, and that's the job for legislators. And so this blueprint was basically his euphemism for writing a law for how businesses could operate going forward. And so he was challenged that was challenged in court, and unfortunately the California courts said it was okay. So now the case is before the California Supreme Court, and we at the Goldwater Institute filed a brief with the court asking them to take up this issue as to whether it's constitutional for the governor to write laws.
Now let me ask you this, because if this, I know you got to let the process work through and go through the state courts, is there a federal case to be made to say this kind of thing violates the civil rights, the federal constitutional rights of Californians, if the California Supreme Court doesn't make a sensible decision?
Yeah, that sort of thing might be theoretically possible. One thing that comes to mind is there's a provision of the U.S. Constitution that says that every state shall be guaranteed a Republican form of government. And no court has ever enforced that provision of the U.S. Constitution in our history. And the what is a Republican form of government? Well, it's one where the people's elected representatives write the law, not one where the governor just gets handed the authority. The lawmakers just get together and say, man, we don't feel like doing our jobs. We're going to let the governor write the laws instead and just hands it off. Unfortunately, like I said, no court has ever enforced that clause, and I think that odds are just against the courts ever doing so.
But Timothy, I don't live in California. I did when I was a little kid, but I don't live there. Haven't lived there in a long, long time. So
yeah,
tell
I'm an
me
escapee
this.
Myself.
There are more and more escapees all the time, and business is playing as well. But my impression was that Newsom could get pretty much anything he wanted out of the legislature in Sacramento. Why didn't he go that route? Say, here's my plan, but by the way, I'm going to throw it over to Sacramento, and they're just going to put a rubber stamp in both houses and hand it back to me, and I'll sign it. Why do you suppose he didn't go that way?
Oh, well, the honest answer is, for political reasons, it's just always easier for the legislature to stand back and say, that's not our job, and to hand off that power to somebody else. And Newsom, of course, the governor likes to have the power, and there's no particular reason for him to give up any kind of power. And the legislature, they want to wash their hands of any responsibility. See, they can take credit if it turns out right, but then if it turns out bad, then they can say, well, it's not our fault. The governor did the thing. It's not my fault. You know, so it gives the handing off power in this way, what lawyers call delegation. Delegation is a very convenient way for getting rid of responsibility while still possibly taking credit for anything good that might happen.
Well, in fact, the Congress seems to do that all the time. So in the minute we've got left, does this also mean that the day that Gavin Newsom wakes up and says, hey, I want to add a few things or take a few things out or do some tweaks to my own plan, he doesn't have to go back to Sacramento, does he?
Right, and Congress, you're absolutely right, does exactly the same thing at the federal level. Hands this power off to the president, and then walks away and acts like they've solved the problem, and then the president, a single person basically, gets to make policy nationwide on a moment's notice. It's not how our Constitution or the state Constitution is supposed to work.
But it is how the deep state works, isn't it? I don't know if you use that term, but I think it's a perfectly good term. The bureaucracy makes the decision, and you say, who elected them? And the answer is nobody.
Yeah, this permanent entrenched bureaucracy that governs our lives so that who you vote for really makes no difference in the end one way or the other.
Well, Democrats are finding that out right now. They've got a brand new candidate for president in their party, and nobody voted for her to be the candidate this year. But hey, the Democrats are capable of getting it done. Timothy, we'll check back in with you when the California courts get closer to making a decision. Thanks so very much.
Thank you.
That is Timothy Sandifer, who's Vice President of Legal Affairs at the Water Institute. Glad to get your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Vote if you've got a moment in our X poll. You'll find it at Lars Larson Show. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars wants a job for any American who wants one, with one exception.
It's time to tell Crooked Joe Biden, you're fired.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and it's a pleasure to be with you. We have 26 radio stations that span Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, and we try to serve the region with honestly provocative talk. Provocative meaning we're trying to provoke you to think. This segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Now, this is what's bizarre. You have a community here in the Pacific Northwest, Grants Pass, which is now getting national attention because they fought their way all the way to the Supreme Court for something very important, the right to regulate homeless encampments on public property. Now, before I tell you what happened there, do you remember when the Supreme Court came down with the so-called Obergefell decision? That was the one on gay marriage. The day they announced the decision, there were town clerks all over America, I don't have to agree with it, but this is what happened, who began handing out marriage licenses to gay couples in America. And everybody was cheering and yeah, 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 and all that. So you say, you got immediate use of it. Here's the way National Review describes Grants Pass here in the Northwest. 3 weeks after the Supreme Court's ruling, leaders in Grants Pass who fought all the way to the Supreme Court for the right to regulate homeless camps have so far done nothing to clear the camps in their cities. And city leaders have warned residents that when they eventually take action, the homeless will likely still be allowed to camp in some parks. Now, there are residents of those communities who are saying this is absolutely crazy. Like Grants Pass resident Brock Spurgeon, co-founder of a community group called Park Watch, which enlists residents to clean and monitor the local park, says his members are upset. And city leaders have said, you know, the Supreme Court ruling was going to come down. Do you have a plan one way or another? And they did not. So they got the right to regulate something that is obnoxious in every community you find homeless encampments in, and now they're doing exactly nothing with it. Let me go first to Tom. Hey, Tom, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, thank you very much for taking my call. And this is a referral or reference to the director of the Secret Service resigning. And okay, fine. Now, what about the agent in charge on the scene of the Trump rally? Should that person not be just summarily fired as opposed to the director, which is being given the courtesy of being able to resign?
I think that the whole agency should be gone through and a bunch of heads should roll, Tom. That's generically. Now, who specifically?
I'm talking specifically to the agent in charge of the Trump rally.
Right, right. The agent in charge during that scene, the one who failed to cover the rooftop. And what we don't know is whether he was ordered to do that, and that would be an entirely different question. But should there be some people there whose heads should roll and they should be out of law enforcement? Absolutely, that should be the case. Let's go to John in Salem. John, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. Thanks for taking my call. Okay. I'm responding to an earlier caller you had regarding the church vandalism case.
Right.
And we had a very frightening case down here in Salem recently. My family attends a church in the Salem area, and recently there was a small group having a Bible study on a weeknight, and an individual started smashing windows on the church, and the group went outside, located the individual, were yelling at him, but they were apprehensive about approaching him because he was large and appeared to be under the influence.
And crazy.
They placed a call to the Salem police, to which the Salem police never responded. Eventually, this individual broke six or seven windows, and a car pulled up in the parking lot and picked him up, and they drove off. And,
did you get the license plate?
Nobody there got the license plate. It happened quickly. But nonetheless, we had no follow up from the Salem police. And I have a feeling this is happening more than we realize.
I'll bet you're right. And do you know what I'd suggest, John? Because I hate people giving generic responses. I think you ought to haul in some city council members. I think you ought to get on the phone, you and your group, and whoever wants to help you out, and call them up and say, this is what happened. Is that sufficient? And if it's not, most police chiefs serve at the pleasure either of the city council or the mayor or both, and say, we would like you to call the chief up and maybe call him up to a city council meeting and have him explain why is no response coming when you've got something like this going on and you've got the suspect on the scene. And if all the city council members say, no, we're not going to bother with that, then tell them that they're going to be replaced by council members who will. I suspect that at least one or two of them will say that's outrageous, that should be answered. And don't just take the shortage of resources answer. say, we want to know, what are you going to do about this? Or is this going to continue to happen? And why? Why are the police failing to respond? And I would point out, I don't know if there have been any other churches or synagogues or mosques or anybody, any other kind of institutions, but take a look and see if you can find out the history of those other places. But make the point to the city council member. If you don't think this is a problem, we don't think you should be on the city council. John, thanks very much. You got the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, you ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network, and always glad to take your calls, too, at 866-HEY-LARS. Hey, what needs to be done to solve Washington State's fentanyl crisis? And it really goes beyond the borders of the Evergreen State. I thought we'd talk about that with Raul Garcia, who's running for the U.S. Senate against Maria Cantwell, who has been there way too long and wasn't much good while she's been there. Dr. Garcia, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Lars. Thank you for having me again.
You made this one of your signature issues, the issue of fentanyl, which is cheap and available and killing an awful lot of people in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, it is our main platform, and the reason being is that we're not paying enough attention to it. We have lost so many census lives over the last few years. We have lost over 400,000 lives in America to drugs over the last 4 years. That's more than we lost in World War II. And we need to bring about a government of true solutions. You know, everybody in government says, well, at least we're doing something. Well, we have to do something right. And this was the reason why I wanted to walk the walk and walked 185 miles from Toppenish to Seattle to make our point known, to raise awareness for fentanyl, and to honor all those people that have died from fentanyl.
So, Dr. Garcia, when the powers that be, the folks in charge in the state of Washington, say we're doing something, but what exactly are they doing? Because I haven't seen the situation change not one little bit. We have more fentanyl. It's notoriously cheap. Some of the drug agents have told me that you can buy a pill. I don't buy stuff like that on the streets, but for a buck or two, and that it's cheap, it's available, and it's oftentimes very deadly.
Well, it's down to about 40 to 50 cents in Yakima, and it is readily available. So I have said that as your next United States Senator, we're going to bring true solutions. The American Fentanyl Act, which will give felony charges to the people distributing this killer, and involuntary mandatory rehab for addicts. And bringing my scientific mind into politics, this worked in the country of Portugal back in 2001 when they had a big opioid epidemic. That's exactly what they did. They put dealers in prison, and they made it a mandatory rehabilitation situation for the addicts. And every addict, Lars, that I have talked to that has succeeded in drug rehabilitation has always come back and say, thank you for making that decision for me when I couldn't make it for myself. Because their brain is telling them to lie, cheat, and steal to get that next fix. And I will tell you this, not only as a doctor, but as a father, because we almost lost our oldest son to fentanyl. And that is exactly what they do. They lie, cheat, and steal. They'll lie to the police officers, to the judges, to their parents, to get that next fix. So it is necessary to take them out of that environment, make a comprehensive rehabilitation program where we're going to include mental health and drug addiction and counseling and relationships with businesses and tech colleges that may want to take these graduates from these drug rehabilitation programs back into the community.
I'm talking to Dr. Raul Garcia, who's running for the U.S. Senate against Maria Cantwell, the Democrat who's occupied that office far too long. Dr. Garcia, before I go any further, where can people find your social media so they can help out your campaign?
Well, Dr. Raul Garcia for U.S. Senate and all the media outlets, you know, Facebook, Instagram, and so on. But Garcia4Wa.com is our website. Garcia4Wa.com is our website. And I ask everybody to join our movement. This is something that we need to do to have change in Washington. We cannot sit on our hands as we often do. We have to get out and do something about it, and let's do something about it together.
Well, is it fair to say that Maria Cantwell has done nothing about this problem? Is she simply AWOL on the fentanyl problem? Because the president with whom she shares a party, he doesn't have much of a brain left these days, but he's the guy who could talk to China about interdicting some of the precursor chemicals that are going straight from China into Mexico and being made into this stuff and then trafficked into the United States. Has she done nothing about this?
Well, she has joined a bill that Tim Scott, of course, one of our leaders in the Senate, put forth, and now she has joined that bill to put a lot more restrictions, a lot more obstacles in drugs coming in from China. But she has done so because she's running against a physician, and there is no one that's running for the United States Senate that could speak to as solutions to fentanyl or any other healthcare problem better than I can. And that is not being arrogant, it's just experience in this field that I have experienced for 26 years. But I've seen it decline and decline and decline, and more people senselessly die from drugs. And we are not doing the right thing. They say, well, at least we're doing something. Well, let's do something right. And
do something that actually works. Well, let me ask you something, doctor, because it gets into the legal field, and I'm not a lawyer, and you're a doctor. As I understand it, Portugal has the ability to go after drug addicts because their civil commitment laws are not the same as the United States, and they have an edge there. Now, if I'm wrong about that, I'm happy to be proved wrong. But it seems to me that we've given people a lot of latitude by saying, well, you can't make somebody do these things. Is it possible to get the kind of treatment that you suggest, where you have a federal law that says if you're caught with this stuff, you've got to go into mandatory drug treatment and or prison?
Of course, and Congress could do that, right? And the ACLU will probably fight it, but as a medical profession, every physician, every addiction specialist will tell you, we need to take these people out of that environment. Their brain is controlling them for 28 days. So that rehab cannot be a month. A month is when they stop getting controlled by that brain telling them to go seek that fix. So this rehab has to be multiple months, and of course, all the experts would tell you 6 months to a year is the minimum. I doubt that I'm going to be able to pass a year through Congress, but I'm going to fight to pass 6 months and get these people out of the streets and bring about true solutions. We're tired of our streets being full of crime, full of drugs, not having safety for our families. And we need to realize that whether we're a Democrat or Republican, Libertarian or an Independent, it affects all of us. Let's change Washington and let's protect the future of our kids. And
I couldn't agree with you more. Dr. Garcia, I couldn't agree with you more. It's got to be some tough consequences because right now, virtually nothing is done to people who traffic drugs in Oregon and Washington. Occasionally there's a case, and almost nothing is done to the people who take those drugs. Dr. Garcia, I appreciate the time. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our ex-poll, should we block the use of puberty blockers for transgender kids the way Great Britain has done? I'd answer yes. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. And you're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
Introducing the Greek god of lousy economics, open borders, and falling upstairs.
I am Joe Bidenopoulos.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network, and I'm glad to get to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our X poll today has been, should we block the use of puberty blockers for transgender kids the way Great Britain has done? Do you know what I wish? In my heart of hearts, I wish that the reporters out there, I was a reporter for a long time. I kept my opinion out. Now I do opinion radio and I put my opinion in. But when I was a reporter, if I saw that one of our best allies on planet Earth, a country that is very much like ours, Great Britain, if they had said, hey, these puberty blocking drugs, quote, are not safe for children, end quote. Now, if you heard that and you say, gee, isn't Oregon Health and Science University using a lot of those puberty-blocking drugs on kids? And the answer is, yes, they are. Well, how about the University of Washington's Medical Center? They're doing it, too, and other medical centers here in the Northwest. One of the first things I would have done as a reporter is call up UW, call up OHSU, and say, this is what Great Britain has done. They have determined in their very culturally similar country to the United States that these drugs are not safe for children. Are you still using them on children at OHSU? Are you still using them at UW? And if so, why? That's a very simple set of questions. And even if they say, yep, we've determined that they're completely safe for kids, the story you do that night would be to say, Great Britain has said these drugs are putting kids at risk, but they are still being used at University of Washington, at Oregon Health and Science University, and you would have a hell of a story. It would certainly grab people's attention. Well, if they're too dangerous in Great Britain, why are they okay to use up on Pill Hill and at the UW? So, to your calls now. Let me start out with, let's go to Brandon. Hey, Brandon, sorry about that unfortunate name. Welcome to the program.
Oh, it's okay, Lars. I never knew that my name would be so famous.
It's on one of my T-shirts. Let's go, Brandon. But anyway, that's yes, enough about that. Yes, you called in about something else.
Yes. So I just wanted to verify the doctor's point of having a maximum minimum of either, hey, you are going to go to treatment or you're going to prison.
That's essentially the deal. And maybe both. Maybe you get locked up and you get treatment, so that means you stay in the treatment for a period of time, because some of these programs are 30 days, and I've talked to the drug treatment folks. I'm not an expert in that, and they've said 30 days ain't going to do it. For most people, you're not going to quit a serious drug. And you have some personal knowledge of this, right?
Yes, sir. So my experience was I was locked in jail for almost 90 days. And then had to go to, or was able to go to a VOA treatment there in Portland, and they're amazing there, and they changed my life. So it was either it was very black and white. Make a choice to be better or go to prison.
That's a pretty easy choice, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Like who wants to spend 7 years in prison and then come out looking a whole different and thinking a whole lot different? No, you have to buckle down, but you have to make that choice. And I think that it's important. And the last 8 years that I've seen, we're just enabling people.
Are you off the drugs now, Brandon, for sure? You're
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
good for you. I wanted to tell you congratulations. I'm glad to hear it. 8 years.
Thank you.
So you're going to stay sober, right?
Yes. No. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Well, see, and yet, I know that to a rational person, you're talking to the general public, and they say, we don't take fentanyl. And you say, wouldn't anybody on that want to get off of it? Well, I guess in theory they do. The problem is the compulsion is incredible, is it not?
It is, and it also controls your body, right? So it's a hard thing to get rid of, especially when you don't feel good. So I understand that part of it. So for me personally, I had to sit in jail for a while and be miserable and go through that.
By the way, Brandon, congratulations to you and good on you for getting off of it. Let's go to the Tri-Cities AM 610 Kona. Lisa, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. Thanks for taking my call.
You
hey, I got quite a few things to say, but I'll be very quick. I wanted to reach out to the church in Salem who's dealing, and you gave them advice to go visit the city council. And so I have quite a bit of experience with this, and it can be tricky. And every city has different rules for addressing the city council. You can't just come call them and... some people don't even know who the city council is, and if you ever go to a city council meeting, you find out that you're the only one there sitting in the seats, except for the city council.
Yep.
That's pretty typical, okay? But if you just try to reach out to them, I did send letters to them, and I didn't get any response, so I sent letters to my congressmen and senators, couldn't get anything, so my neighbors and I showed up in force at the city council meeting. So the
Good.
Best response is to show up in force, okay? So that whole church should try to get together and show up. But you need to learn when they meet. So for my city council, you can go online, typically, to your city. So City of Salem, for instance.
Yep.
But this isn't just for Salem. This is for everybody.
Yep.
You go online to their website, and you'll find a schedule. So my city council meets on the third Tuesday of every month at 6 o'clock at night. Well, you have to know that in advance. The other thing is they typically have rules, so you can't just show up and address the city council. And typically,
you have to look for the public comment period, don't you?
That's right. You have to submit something in advance in writing to them. And every city council is different, so my city council gives you 2 minutes, and they don't want, like, all my neighbors showed up, they don't want everybody to repeat the same thing. So we all got together, and we wrote our...
2 minutes at a time. You can do a 30-minute speech if you got 15 minutes, or 15 people who do 2 minutes each, right?
I know, right. Well, sometimes when we'd go to the city council, you know, they are usually done in an hour, and we'd hold them up for 3 hours. Well, they get pretty tired of that.
Too bad.
So show up at every one, and they know you're not going to stop, and that's what we would tell them. Look, this is important to us, and if this, you know, problem was next door to your house, it'd be fixed by now.
And by the way, Lisa, could you negotiate with them and say, look, we've got 15 of us here at 2 minutes each, or you can give our one chosen spokesperson 30 minutes or 20 minutes to just get it all said at once. I think you've got some negotiating leverage, don't you?
Well, and that actually worked for us because the city council members actually came out to our homes and they had a community meeting at my neighbor's house, and we all got together.
Okay, last question before we run out of time, Lisa. Did you get the change you wanted?
We did. It's still in the process with the courts, but we've made progress. I mean, this is like a 17-year problem that we've had with some neighbors. It's a homeless
That is all great advice, Lisa. I think that's the way to get it done. And by the way, have somebody shoot video and audio of your presentation and post it online.
The Lars Larson Show. Lars has a face for radio?
Oh, he's hideous!
Wanna see? Follow him on Instagram at The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to take your calls. You know, there are a lot of things about Vice President Harris not to like. And a lot of things about Kamala Harris, her history as a San Francisco district attorney, her history as the Attorney General of California, where she learned how to engage in lawfare and attack her conservative opponents and others. And then she, of course, learned from the Biden crime family for the last 3.5 years how things work there. And now the Democrats have decided, without the benefit of any voting by Democrat voters in America, to anoint her as the choice of the Democrat Party. So You know, they're going to protect democracy by choosing presidential candidates for a party without any voters whatsoever. But there are some other things to be concerned about when it comes to Kamala Harris. And I thought we'd talk about those with Véronique Desrougis, who's a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. Véronique, we usually talk economics, but welcome back to start talking about politics as we're just over 100 days away from the election.
Good evening.
Tell me this. What is there to like, if there is anything out there, in what we know, what little we know, about what a Kamala Harris economy would be like should she become the elected president of the United States?
Not much, I'm afraid. I'm afraid really not much, because usually when it's a Democrat, I could say, well, you won't like it. Her economics, but you will like maybe she's good on criminal justice reform and things like this. But in this case, really, actually, she's good on neither. Her economics is by far, far at the left of Joe Biden, which is to say a lot, considering that the 3 years he was in office, or 4 years, he was really hijacked in a way by the left, his left flank, with student forgiveness and all of this. She's actually further to this. She wants to forgive student debt for most people once and for all. So I don't know what she replaces it with. She wants a 15%, $15 minimum wage at the federal level, which, you know, will be quite devastating for some places. And I'm sure that now, by the way, after inflation, she will want maybe 20 or something like this. She had said at some point she supported Medicare for all and wanted to abolish private insurance. She came back on that. She realized that was not really selling her as a candidate. That's what she was running. Of course, she was one of the first co-signer of the Green New Deal. So all things like this. But on top of that, when she was in California, she was actually quite happy to leave people in jail who had been proven innocent. She was really a harsh drug warrior, which, you know, usually
she prosecute about 1,900 people on marijuana alone? I mean, no, we're not talking fentanyl, just marijuana.
Yeah. No, she's quite bad. In a way, she's very much like Hillary Clinton. Clinton was the same in a way, except she's just much more on the left of Clinton.
And in fact, she believes in some fairly strange economic ideas. One of them that I noticed that I wanted to ask you about is the Federal Price Gouging Prevention Act, which effectively says if you're selling stuff, gasoline or plywood or whatever you're selling during regular times, then when there's an emergency and there's a shortage of supply, then you would effectively prohibit its sale above certain prices, which I'm sure people would be glad for. But it would be like having a law that says you can only sell gasoline at $2 a gallon. How much gas will be for sale at $2 a gallon? None. But the price will be right. It's just that kind of bizarre approach to economics.
Yeah, she like her boss, actually, like her, I mean, her former boss, I guess, I should say, is very much in favor of price control. It doesn't matter that these ideas have been debunked, like, quite literally for decades and decades by economists on the right and on the left. And they're just, she likes to put, she likes to believe that there's no rhyme or reason for the fluctuation of prices in the market. And she also seems to believe that when you put a ceiling on a price, it's not going to have, you know, nasty consequences, often on the supply side, and create shortages, which, of course, is the case. I mean, remember that a few days before Biden decided to step down, they were about to propose some sort of national rent control that bill, right?
I mean, he did roll it out, and he said 5% cap, except the costs of maintaining housing have risen more than 5%. In fact, I think property tax alone nationwide averaged a 4% increase. So if you can only raise the rent by 5% and some of your costs are going up, including maintenance and everything else, by more than that, it doesn't really give you any place to go, does it?
No. I mean, it's rent control, no matter how you design it, is like the most studied and the most vilified type of policy that economists have ever found. I mean, there's literally, if we think there's somewhat of a consensus on trade and on against tariffs, there's like literally incredible consensus that rent control is bad. No matter how you design it, no matter how you frame it, it is bad, bad, bad. And it backfires. And that's the problem. It's like these guys think that they just live in an alternative reality.
And in fact, one of the other ideas she's got is for the Federal Reserve, and you know from previous conversations, I'm not a fan of the Federal Reserve, but mm-hmm. she wants to tell the Federal Reserve, all Federal Reserve banks have to interview at least one person of each gender and racial or ethnic diversity before they decide on a new president for that bank?
Yes, that was one of the proposal. It's one of the legislation she introduced with, I can't remember who she introduced. She may have actually introduced this one solo. And yeah, I mean, at the very least, we're lucky that she didn't say that, you know, Federal Reserve Bank should be actually firing everyone and rehiring to have the proper ratio of gender and race. But yeah, that's the kind of thing. It's like they're forgetting that the Federal Reserve job is actually the main job is price stability. It's not anything else. And price stability is not necessarily, implemented and achieved through DEI type policies. But it's just like these are not serious policies. These are just signaling policies. And there's just like, and when she supports actually kind of consequential policies, they're all like disastrous, like Medicare for all and price control at the federal level, rent control, and also NI gouging, which would make emergencies way worse.
Yeah, because the minute there's an emergency, whether it's an earthquake or a storm or anything else, yeah, prices should rise. But if you want to have gasoline or you want to have whatever it is you need to get in there quickly, will there be some extra costs? Yes. Will anybody who's selling those things be able to recover those extra costs? No, it'll be against the law. So what's the choice? You say, well, if I'm a gas station operator and somebody says, if you want to bring in an extra tanker of gas and you have to pay an extra, $1,000, couple of $1,000 to bring it in, you cannot pass that cost along to your customers. Then the gas station operator says, fine, I'll just close the pumps and go home for the day. Problem solved. That is Veronique Desrougies, who's a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. Veronique, it's always a pleasure. Back in a moment. I'll get to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails, talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Biden doesn't understand the connection between America's tanking economy and his own tax policies. Luckily, Senator John Kennedy sent him straight.
If you believe that tax policy has nothing to do with the economy, then you're pretty much like a rock, only dumber.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. And in Seattle, they now have the problem of 13 and 14-year-olds with fully automatic machine guns. Yeah, believe it or not, and I'm not even sure what the legal system can do with this situation, but over the last weekend, two 14-year-olds and a 13-year-old were arrested. They were brandishing firearms at Seafair, at the parade in the Chinatown International District in Seattle. They didn't just have guns, though. What the police found was that at least two of the guns had been modified to be fully automatic. Now, they booked these kids, 13-year-olds, one 13-year-old, and two 14-year-olds, into juvenile detention on charges like unlawful possession of a gun, unlawful carry of a pistol, and felony harassment. But they said only one of them was still in custody on Monday after a judge found probable cause to hold him on unlawful possession of a firearm. Not a fully automatic firearm, a firearm. Now, let me suggest something to you. How seriously do we want to take the crime of possession of a machine gun? Well, the federal law, and I looked it up again today to make sure the details are right. If you are caught with one full automatic firearm, pistol or rifle, and believe me, there is a Glock that's actually fully automatic. They're not for sale to the general public. I don't have one, but some military and some law enforcement have them. 10 years in federal prison and a fine up to $250,000. Although, what do you do with a 13-year-old and two 14-year-olds who've committed that kind of crime? I have a feeling those kids are going to go into the juvenile system. They will not be there very long. They will not be convicted of anything terribly serious that'll hold them in custody, and they will be back out and a threat to the community. Now, if they could lead the police to where they obtained these firearms, which are thoroughly illegal under the National Firearms Act and everything else, that's great. Maybe you give them a break for that. But otherwise, what do you do with two 14-year-olds and a 13-year-old who are running around with fully automatic machine guns? On that note, let's go to your calls. And if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here on the Radio Northwest Network at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Rhonda, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, how are you?
I'm doing quite well. How are you?
Okay, I've heard you talk about a lot about puberty blockers affecting kids, well, their hormones and whatnot, but in addition, I would like to talk about vaccines, how they affect kids' hormones. About a year ago, my daughter was diagnosed with a gene mutation called MTHFR C677T. There's another variant called that she doesn't have called MTHFR.
Okay, there's a lot of detail, Rhonda, and I'm going to warn you. People get tied up in the details, and then they complain to me.
Well,
I ran out of time. Why don't we get to the point?
I wanted to tell you the two mutations.
Okay, very good.
Anyways, what's important about that is that about 40 to 60% of us have at least one of those mutations, and depending on what study you read. But one of the complications of this mutation is her body has a hard time detoxing from heavy metals. Most vaccines have aluminum in them, which is, you know, used as an adjuvant, and heavy metals like to settle in fat. Your brain is mostly made of fat, and heavy metals can also accumulate in your glands where hormones are made and directly affect the whole process of that. From age 0 to 18, kids get about 69 doses or more of 16 plus different vaccines from age 0 to 18, and if they stick to the CDC schedule. And yes, I know there are environmental exposures to heavy metals, but gosh.
And aluminum, for sure.
What more of a direct hit to the bloodstream when you inject something intramuscular right into the bloodstream? And the other thing to note about this gene mutation, and again, 40 to 60% of us, depending on the study you read, are walking around with at least one of these gene mutations. And the other health issue this mutation can cause my daughter is dementia, probably because of the heavy metal accumulation. So we're talking about all this chemicals that we're giving kids with these puberty blockers, chemical, I like to call the over-vaccinating of these children. It's causing them all kinds of health issues. I call it chemical psychosis. Hormones.
Well, what would you propose as the solution? They put them in as adjuvants, which simple explanation is it makes the vaccine more effective against things like Hep A and Hep B.
It triggers the immune response.
Right.
The heavy metal, almost.
Well, except aluminum's not considered a heavy metal, is it? I thought that was lead and cadmium.
It is a neurotoxin, and it can and aluminum can.
Rhonda, you've got to tell me though, what's the solution?
And that's what I'm going to vote for Trump, but I've been long to Children's Health Defense, Robert Kennedy Jr.'s organization long before COVID.
Okay, but Rhonda, if I can't, I've got to get you to email me and tell me what is the solution. Do we take them out? James in Bellevue, welcome to the program. You wanted to reply to my, what do we do with teenage kids with fully automatic weapons? What's the solution?
Yeah, Lars. So for a punishment, you know, my wife and I have talked about this, like with other criminals, like what do we do? I think we should start bringing back for juveniles, especially putting them to work for the state, cutting grass on the freeways, picking up trash, kind of like really serving their community in a way. I think that would be...
Is that enough for something that would send an adult to prison for 10 years?
No, I'm not saying that's enough, but I think that's something that would be good to add on to their punishment other than just sitting in a cell and being able to watch TV and work out.
The Lars Larson Show.